passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another draft podcast on the Baseball America podcast feed. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined, as always, by Peter Flaherty. We're in the middle of conference tournament week. What's up, Peter? How you doing? Hanging in there?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing well. As we were talking about before we started recording, I think both of us are running a little bit on adrenaline at this point. But I was talking with Teddy yesterday. Like, the conference tournament week is one of, if not our favorite weeks of the college baseball season. That opening weekend in Omaha, like, every game means so much. There's a domino effect with each result, so there's so much to follow no matter who you root for.
Yeah, for me, conference tournament week is always lined up with me writing a ton of draft reports. For just given the calendar, we're always running out the 500 right around this time of year, so we're also working on the draft preview issue for the magazine each time of year. So it's just a lot of report writing for me, like 400 plus players who are going to be on the BA 500 that just need their initial scouting reports. And then as we prep the top 100 players that go into the magazine, a lot of those players still have kind of their preseason reports that we filed initially. So there's a lot of updating to do just to make sure those are up to date and reflective of what the players did this spring and changes in profile. So it's a lot of that. There's plenty of other things. We're working on All-America teams. We're working on various pieces of other content features for the draft preview issue. And still phone calls with scouts, trying to make sure we're keeping tabs on players who are moving, because there are still significant movers on the draft board. I know Ryan Waldschmidt is one of the bigger up-arrow college players who just today... Kentucky and Arkansas playing. It sounds like he had a pretty good game. I saw his walk and his initial AB live, and then I saw the home run after the fact. But we've also got some high school players that are moving up boards that I wanted to talk through today. But yeah, we don't really have a game plan in this episode. We're just kind of going to hop on here and cut it up and see what's most interesting about the draft at this point. So I guess I'll just ask you, Peter, is there anything that has really jumped out to you on the draft front at this, at whatever you've been watching? I'm sure you've been watching a lot, but has anyone made a significant move for you in conference tournament week at this point or impressed you?
I wouldn't say in this week alone. It's hard to make a real significant move off of just a couple of days, but I think Ryan Waldschmidt, as you alluded to, he continues to really impress. He hit two home runs today or yesterday when you're listening to this against Arkansas. Like, for me, it's plus hit, plus power. It's a really explosive and strong operation in the box. He has no problem getting to his power in game. It's plus bat speed. He's a good athlete in the field. Like, there is just a lot to like with him, and I think from all the feedback we've gotten, he's a guy that has just continued to see his stock ascend here as the season's gone on. So for me, he's squarely in the day one conversation, but like, he's just going to keep on trending up, assuming he continues to play well. Like, I would not be floored if, when all is said and done, especially if Kentucky goes on a run and he's kind of the catalyst behind the run, if he goes, you know, later in the first round, like, it wouldn't totally blow my mind.
Yeah, the one guy for me that I was pretty impressed with, and this was, I think, the first day of the SEC tournament, but Gage Jump matching up with Georgia. I know he's had a strong season in general, but it seems like down the stretch he's been getting a lot more buzz. I'm not sure if he's shot himself into the first round exactly, but he feels like a pretty safe day one pick at this stage. Like, someone getting him in the second round seems like a pretty good value. He struck out 7 in, I think he allowed just 1 earned run against Georgia in 7 innings. He didn't have the most swing and miss on his fastball that he typically gets on that pitch, but he still elicited some chases outside of the zone. It was just pretty good for 7 innings against a pretty strong offensive team. So he's a name that I'm kind of intrigued with if he keeps posting. I think there's like this tier of college left-handed pitchers in the second round range that have been a little bit hard for me to separate. Guys like Jump, Ryan Prager, Carter Holton. We have them all kind of neck and neck right now. And that was a fun start to see from him. And it does feel like every year there is some pitcher who makes a significant up arrow move in college baseball's postseason, because unlike hitters, I think it is a lot easier for pitchers to make significant changes with their draft stock in a single outing, whether it's because they're coming back from injury and are just now getting healthy, or they just happen to have a really lights out effort in front of a big crowd of evaluators, because there are just so many scouts and decision makers who are bearing down on priority targets. And if you happen to be pitching one of those games and you shove, I really do think that moves the needle quite a bit. I mean, just last year, Ty Floyd, with what he did in the College World Series, I have to imagine that was pretty influential in getting him up into the range where he was selected.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great call on Jump. In a similar breath, Luke Holman, another LSU arm that really impressed. He made mincemeat of a really solid Kentucky lineup. I think that's a guy that fits into the late first. I think late first is a little rich right now for Holman. But again, if LSU goes on a run, they're playing really well right now. And he's a big, they're not going to be able to make a run without at least a couple of quality starts from him. So he could pitch his way into that range. He's more of a comp to early second round guy for me, but Jump, it's an intriguing blend of strikes and stuff. It was on full display yesterday, pounded the zone. I think if his 105 pitches, 75 were for strikes. Fastball had its typical life, especially in the top half of the zone, mixed in 2 distinct breaking balls. Good athlete on the mound with arm speed. Fourth time, I think, this year where he was really stretched out and has looked good since returning from an injury. So I think there's a lot of encouraging signs with Jump. And like LSU, he's kind of hitting his stride at the right time from a draft standpoint as well. So that was a great call on him.
Yeah, I think Holman is fascinating too, because I think we've talked about it a lot, but after the top tier of pitchers, it's kind of a lot of question marks about who the next guy is. And if you look at Luke Holman's season, it's pretty strong. I mean, it's 15 starts right now after his most recent outing. That was 7 strikeouts, 2 walks, no runs, no hits, and 6 innings against Kentucky. 2.54 ERA, 33% strikeout rate, career high mark for him, 9.2% walk rate, which is actually a little bit higher than I would have expected. I guess he had a few outings down the stretch with more walks than you would typically expect from him. Yeah, he walked 5 against Texas A&M, walked 4 against Alabama. Outside of those 2 starts, it's been 3 or fewer walks for the most part for him this season. And I think he might be another good example of a pitcher who, you know, like all it takes is a couple of really electric outings in front of the right people. And then you compare that. It's not like he's making up for a bad season. He's been pretty consistent throughout the year. And yeah, maybe he doesn't have the typical stuff that you're looking for in the first round. But I think for a number of reasons, you're just going to be getting atypical pitchers in the first round this year, given the draft class. That is, unless you want to maybe pivot and go with some of these high school pitchers who are shooting up the boards. There are a couple pitchers that I want to bring up in that capacity. But I also wanted to just mention Trey Savage, East Carolina right-handed pitcher, because this week we got some news about his health status, which was kind of scary. And I just wanted to mention it, at least on the podcast. It was yesterday, so we're recording this on Thursday, so Wednesday afternoon of this week. A few days ago, as you're listening to this podcast, ECU coach Cliff Godwin announced that he was in the hospital and recovering from a partially collapsed lung. He was dealing with some chest discomfort after his last start a week ago. Apparently, that lingered. He went to the hospital, got an x-ray, found out that he had a collapsed lung, or a partially collapsed lung is specifically what was said. So that is pretty concerning. I mean, that just is a scary situation for you, Savage. It sounds like he's going to be released or already has been released at the time of this podcast and will be able to resume physical activity. I'm not sure when he's going to pitch again or what this really does for his draft stock moving forward. But first of all, hopefully he's just okay and healthy. But I mean, Savage had done everything he possibly could this year to push himself up boards or push himself up boards and get into this top tier of players. I wonder how that's going to be handled moving forward and if we'll see him throw again and how he's looking, because that was just a really freak situation.
Yeah, first and foremost, you know, I hope he's okay. It sounds like he's on the mend, which is great to hear. But when that came out, I think on Tuesday or Wednesday, it kind of caught everyone by surprise. But yeah, certainly a scary situation. Happy it was handled well and he's on the mend. And I don't know / maybe think it'll really affect his stock in a negative way at all. Like, that's kind of a freak thing that you can't, I mean, it sounds sort of unavoidable to an extent. So I don't really see it as much of a hindrance, but I'm curious as to when he might get back on the mound, because for ECU to make a run here, they'll certainly need him. And selfishly, I really want to watch him pitch again, but obviously his health is the paramount concern here. But just a scary situation all around, but happy it's trending in the right way.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been exceptional really for the last two full seasons as a starter. He had kind of, I wouldn't say middling. He had good strikeout stuff as a freshman in 2022 when he was pitching out of the bullpen, a lot of appearances, but really struggled with the command more than we're accustomed to seeing him. In the last 2 years as a starter, his walk rate took a huge step forward from the 2022 to the 2023 season, 17.2% to 7.4%. It's been in that 7-9% range from 2023 to 2024. It's a sub-3 ERA over the past 2 years. He's logged a lot of innings. He started consistently. It's a 33-plus strikeout rate year over year, over 40% this year. He's got stuff. It's a deep mix of secondaries. It's a good body. Really, with him, it feels like the only question mark is like the delivery. There are some scouts who just think it is an atypical-looking delivery. They don't love that. But when the other pitchers in front of you are Chase Burns and Hagen Smith, it's not like you're competing with Chase Dolander delivery profiles in this draft class. There are a lot of unusual and unorthodox-looking deliveries. So it's just a really well-rounded profile in my mind. So I hope it is like what you said, that you don't think it'll impact his stock too much, because he's just been so good. And East Carolina has done a really nice job developing these pitchers in recent years. I mean, Gavin Williams has been tremendous, also a former reliever turned starter. So it's just a good program, a good pitcher. And like you said, I hope we can see him pitch into the postseason, because he is probably the top five pitchers you would want on the mound for your team in a do or die game. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The delivery point's an interesting one. Like, to me, watching him, it's not like by any stretch a buttery, smooth looking delivery, and it's not uber athletic. It's a little bit of a checkpoint delivery, if you will. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what it is to me a little bit. But I don't think that's much of a knock on him. Like you said, there's very little relief risk with his profile. It's an intriguing blend of stuff and strikes. Particularly, I've been encouraged with the jump his split change has made this year. It's looked like a 55, or closer to a 6 than a 55 at times. The gyro slider is really effective, and then his fastball up to 98 with a ton of carry through the zone. So that's a guy where after Burns and Smith, if I'm picking in that, you know, really anywhere from 9 to like 14-ish, 15 range, I'm happily going out and pulling the trigger on your Savage.
Yeah, I agree. Do you like his changeup or his slider better? I see some people that I think say the slider is his best secondary pretty confidently, and for me, I think they're close, and I think I prefer the changeup, to be honest.
I'm with you. After this year, like, I also might lean changeup. Like, he kills spin.
I also
really well.
Am a sucker for changeups in general, so I'm a little biased.
Oh, exactly. Like, I love. There's something so great about just a legit, you know, plus changeup. It looks so good coming out of the hand with you, Savage. kill spin really well, throws it against both right and left-handed hitters. It's clear he's got a super advanced feel for it, and it just kind of falls off the table as it approaches the plate, and he maintains his arm speed, consistent release point. It's super, super effective. So I think that while his slider is also an above average offering, I'd probably lean changeup.
Awesome. It's always makes me feel good, Peter, when you agree with something I say. I'm on the right track. So that's good. So just thinking about pitching in this class, it does feel like there are some prep pitchers that have moved significantly up boards. On our next update, we'll have two pretty extreme risers on the board. One other riser who was more of a notable name from last summer and already in a decent spot, but is also moving up boards. And I'm curious to see, like, if the back of the first round is going to be maybe a little more high school pitcher heavy than it has been, or if these are still going to be guys who go after the first and get paid more. Because I think the prep pitching class in this like 25 to 60 range is really competitive with the college pitching class, just given some of the shaky performances, reliever question marks we've had. And some high school pitchers have really made strides in positive directions. And the three players I want to highlight on this podcast and just talk through a little bit with you, Peter, are one, left-hander Cash Mayfield, who is out of Oklahoma. Two, Ryan Sloan, a right-handed pitcher out of Illinois, who is probably the most famous of this three, or at least the most well-known. Like, we've written about him previously. He was all over the summer showcase circuit. He was in a couple notable All-America games. And then the third is maybe the most fun, just because he's an Idaho prep pitcher, and we rarely have pitchers from Idaho. That's Dax Whitney, who's a right-handed pitcher out of Blackfoot High School in Idaho. And all these guys are moving up boards. I think both Mayfield and Ryan Sloan have real chances to go in the first round. I don't feel as confident that Dax Whitney will be in the first round, but he has had significant heat flying into Idaho to see him. A lot of scouts are probably getting familiar with a state that they just don't often have to go to because of him. And like, for me, from my standpoint, from my perspective over here, where I'm not actually paying these players and actually taking on the risk, I love when teams do. I love these high risk, high reward high school pitching profiles, just because at some point I think they're just the better players than their college counterparts, where you can feel a little bit more safe. You do have to be pretty, you have to be willing to take on risk for these profiles, though. So it's always iffy on like how many of them are going to go, what kind of spot are they going to go in. But quickly to break them down, Mayfield is like this buttery, smooth left-handed pitcher with a clean, balanced delivery who, as an underclassman, I think he established himself as one of the better strike throwers in this 2024 class. I didn't see him much on the summer showcase circuit last year. In fact, I don't think I saw him live at all. And then he showed up at a PBR Super 60 event. He had added a little bit more power. And the reviews from him this spring have just been phenomenal. It's a three-pitch mix with a fastball that's touching mid-90s, a quality slider. And then the changeup is actually a pitch that a lot of scouts seem to like. But really what stands out with him is just the projection, the ease of the delivery, and the strikes. Ryan Sloan is maybe a very different profile. He's almost a full year younger than Mayfield. He's more physical already. He has a fastball that's been up to 99 reportedly this spring. Last summer, I saw him touching 96 with a good slider, a good changeup, another player with a three-pitch mix. But the power has continued to come on for the fastball. The slider last summer, I thought the slider and the changeup both had a chance to be above average pitches. Now the slider looks like a real plus pitch to me, just based on how sharp and darting and hard breaking that ball has been. He's just generating some silly swings with it. And then with Dax Whitney, another player that I didn't get a chance to put my eyes on too much in person, I think he's pretty loyal to his Legion team there, so he didn't do a whole lot of the travel ball scene, which is commendable, I think, for him. Like, it's a testament to the fact that you really don't need to do every single travel ball event. If you're a good player, scouts are going to find you. And Dax Whitney is in the middle of Idaho, and he was found because he's just a great pitcher. It's an elite pitching frame, 6'5", 195 pounds, another good mover on the mound, maybe not quite as smooth as Mayfield, but it looks pretty impressive. He's been up to 95, 96. Two breaking balls, curveball and slider that look like quality pitches, and a changeup as well. And it sounds like this weekend he's going to be pitching in Arizona in front of a huge crowd, so I'm excited to see what he does there. But those are three prep names I just wanted to highlight. Peter, I don't know if you have any thoughts on any of these guys. I know you're more focused on the college players, but just don't expect, or don't be surprised, I should say, when their names are a lot higher on the board. I think all have a chance to go inside the top 50 picks.
Yeah, all three are certainly quality arms, especially Dax Whitney is the most, I'd say, helium name of the three. I'd probably tier them Mayfield, Sloan, and then Whitney, but Whitney has gained some serious momentum this spring. Like you said, you know, directors are flying up to see him. It's a really good body at 6'5", 6'6", 195. There's room to add strength to him. Fastball already up to 96. Curveball is his best off speed. He also will mix in a slider. Curveball, from what I've seen, just in looking at some of the video that I have available,
it's a hammer.
It's a banger. Like, if I would have no problem sticking a plus grade on it if you catch him on a good day. So, and I also think, like you said, him playing for his Legion team and staying loyal, that earns some serious brownie points in my book. I really respect that. And like you said, if you're good, people will find you. It comes down to that, but that's a whole other tangent I could go on. And then with Mayfield, like, man, you want to talk about a clean, smooth, repeatable delivery. It's him. Like, it is low maintenance, under control, easy velo. He's been up to
have one of the best deliveries in this class, like college or high school. I'm trying to think of a pitcher whose delivery I prefer to his. When I was watching video on him several months ago, that was the first thing that stood out. Like, if you watch him, he's just so balanced and so loose and so easy. It looks like he's pitching in slow motion, honestly, with how clean and loose it is.
I'm not sure there is one. I'd have to think. But this cliche gets thrown around so much. Like, it really does look like he's playing catch at, like, 93 to 95. And I know this spring, according to Kylie McDaniel from a few weeks back, he was up to 98. He's holding his velocity well through outings. He's got a good off-speed offering in his kind of slurvy breaking ball. And I really like him a lot. Like, when we get back into when we start talking about later in the first round, when these arms start to mold together a little bit, like, I don't know. Are you taking him or sticking on the high school side, like him versus Cam and Idy, I think, is an interesting debate.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because, like, near the start of the year, Cam and Idy seemed to be solidly the top high school pitching prospect on the board. Then William Schmidt kind of jumped into the conversation, and now we've got Mayfield, and they're very different players, like different deliveries, different strengths in their pitch mix. Like, I think Cam and Idy's fastball will be better and probably is better now, even though that 98 is pretty loud. Just the pitch traits of the fastball and how Cam and Idy is able to use it, it just looks like a dominant offering. I don't think Mayfield has the sort of breaking ball that Ryan Sloan does now, but I do think I prefer it to Cam and Idy's. I think both the bodies are pretty good. I wouldn't want to go one direction or another there, but Cam and Idy has a massive edge in terms of age. I think that probably matters more for hitters, but with the gap that they have there, for me, it's like, do you want the younger pitcher in Cam and Idy, who probably will have a better fastball, or do you want Mayfield, who has the superior delivery in my mind and the more well-rounded pitch mix in my mind, but who also is going to be 19 and a half on draft day? I don't know. I think I might take Mayfield, but it's close, and I would really have to think through this one. And again, like many players in this class, depending on the day and time you ask me, I might have a different answer. But yeah, thinking about him this close to Cam and Idy, like back in February, if you had said that, I'd have been like, oh no, like Cam and Idy is very clearly the top left-hand pitcher in the prep class. But it's a really good debate right now.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting. And you mentioned, like, Mayfield is going to be over 19 on draft day, Cam and Idy not even 18 yet. So like you said, that plays in his favor, but I still really do like Mayfield's body. Like, it's a pretty moldable ball of clay at 6'4", 200. Like, it's clear that he can put on some weight, like at least, I don't know, 10 to 12 plus pounds. And
yeah,
I think you can work. There's plenty to work with there.
Hearing about, I think Cam and Idy has a solid changeup, but hearing about some scouts who just love the conviction with which Mayfield throws his changeup. As a sucker for changeups, that gets me really excited as well. So I'll need to dig more on these and see if I have like a really strong preference, but it's a fun one.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's bank holiday and there's big savings across hundreds of products at Matalan. There's up to 20% off selected home and outdoor, plus 20% off selected women's wear and footwear. And there's 3 for 2 across selected kids and baby too. In-store, online at matalan.co.uk and via the app. T's and C's apply, selected lines only.
Yeah, I mean, I could see a team picking in this range going either way. And then when you start comparing them to the college arms, like in this range, and with how they're kind of tiered out, at least on the BA rankings, it's just a really interesting group of names. Like, in no order, you have guys like Drew Beam and Jonathan Santucci, Mayfield, Ben Hess, Bryce Cunningham, Luke Holman. You could go in a number of different directions. So I'd probably go, like, Mayfield, at least for me, might be at the top of those, like, of the list of those names. I don't really know how wide of a margin he'd be at the top by, but right now I'd probably prefer him to everyone else.
Yeah, I might like Sloan a bit too, and maybe this is like just because I've seen him in person a bit more, but his entire pitch mix is like now stuff for me. The fastball is the loudest of the group we're talking about here. I'd actually be curious how people view Sloan's fastball versus Caminiti's fastball at this stage, and how the lefty versus righty comparison factors in. But his slider might be the most consistently strong breaking ball, at least of these high schoolers. The changeup, I thought it was good a year ago. I'm not sure if it's changed too significantly this year beyond he's just kind of throwing everything a little bit harder. He's very physical. Like, you don't need to dream on him adding a lot more strength. He's pretty strong now. It's a fun group of pitchers here. Even if I'm like not... like, I wouldn't shove any of these guys up at like 15, I don't think. Like, I don't view any of them as like a Noble Meyer type, but when comparing them to a Thomas White from a year ago, I think it's a lot more interesting there.
Yeah, I'm with you. I wouldn't necessarily get these guys way up, but with Sloan, I mean, it's big time power stuff, like 6'5", 225, super durable frame, fastball up to, as you said, reportedly 99. Mm-hmm. And then the slider and the changeup for me, I think both are above average, but I mean, on the right day, both are going to be plus. And like, I've seen video where I've come away close to sticking a plus grade on both of them. So,
I think I might take all these high school pitchers over guys like Brody Brecht or Jonathan Santucci. And part of this is also just because, like, we're able to nitpick the college players a little bit more because we see them more frequently and see what they struggle in. And it's a lot easier for me to ignore the projection you need with the high school players and ignore their flaws and dream on them than it is with the college players, I think. So maybe that is just like a personal bias of mine. But yeah, I'll be very curious on draft day to look up and see, like, in this 20 to 60 range, how many high school pitchers are going to go and how many college pitchers are going to go. And maybe it's tricky to do that as a direct comparison because of the signability and the games the teams will play with that. But I'm fascinated to see because there are a lot of arms in this range that are just depending on what you like in a pitcher, what you're afraid of with the pitcher, your tolerance for high school pitchers, how much you covet the left-handed pitching demographic in general. Are you willing to take on a pitcher with strikes concerns this high? Like, all these things are going to factor in. I think we're going to learn a lot about, like, the industry and certain team philosophies this year with how they handle pitchers.
Yeah, definitely. That them taking this group of high school arms over really – this group of high school arms over Santucci, that's an interesting debate over Brecht. That's a little bit of a spicy take. I might lean Brecht now.
Always been maybe one of the lower on Brecht in the room. And I'm not sure if that's come across on the podcast or not, but I will give him credit. He has made improvements year over year with his strike throwing, and he's all the way down to a 14% walk rate right now. So does that get you fired up?
The combination of elite stuff and athleticism, him in the right org and in player development department and having the right hands on him, he's going to be a monster. Now, that's not to say that I'd take him in the top 15 or so. I think that he very well could go in that top 15 range, but I'd take him in the back half of the first round. I'd probably take him over these high school arms.
You'd be responsible for taking the most erratic first round college pitcher in draft history, Peter. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I know. For as potentially low as his floor is, like, the ceiling is just as high. Like, there is so much to dream on here. Like, picking in this 20 to 30 range, especially 22 to 30 plus, like, I'd bet on the ceiling. Like, the athleticism, the hellacious stuff. I have my faith and trust in my player development department and my pitching department to get him right and maximize the quality strikes. That's a roll of the dice I'm willing to take.
Yeah, and I think that makes sense. And also, like, it's unfair to just look at Brody Brecht and what his concerns are, because if you look at really any other player on the board in this range, they all have their concerns. Like, William Schmidt, I think there are some strikes and arm stroke concerns. With Caminiti, you have the spin concerns. With Theo Gillen, you have concerns about where he's going to profile defensively. With Kellen Lindsay, you have concerns about the impact and power. With Tommy White, you have concerns about, like, where he's going to play, if he profiles well enough for the hit power to be exciting at first base, in addition to the chase he's shown. With Malcolm Moore, he just hasn't really performed. With Cash Mayfield, you don't have a long track record with him. And is it, like, it's not even close to the stuff being as loud as Brody Brecht? With Jonathan Santucci, you've got real fastball command concerns. You've got some health background. Like, none of these players are players you can look at and say, like, oh, they're flawless. That's probably the nature of every draft class in this 15 to plus range. But particularly this year, I think you're basically going to have to find players that you want to like and just acknowledge that everyone's going to have flaws. I mean, even at the very top, you can find flaws with Charlie Connor and Travis Bazzana, right? This isn't anything new. None of these players are perfect, but it might really be a case where you just have to kind of fall in love with what you're excited about and acknowledge that you're going to have to help these players develop and improve and make strides.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I really don't have anything to add to it, because, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with all those guys. So it's just going to make everything really, really interesting. I think in that breath, though, when looking up and down the board in terms of, like, guys I'd feel safe about, or, like, the safest about and most convicted on, like, if I'm picking in this top 20 or so range, the guys I'd be willing to pound the table for, I think that list shrinks down a little bit. Like, taking Condon and Bazan out of the equation, because they're pretty set, I'd say, with where they're going to end up going, barring something, I don't know, something a little bit unforeseen.
Bazzana robs a bank or something before the draft, maybe things would change.
Exactly. but like James Tibbs is one of those guys where,
even
if I'm picking in the back half of the top 10, I'd go out and take him. Like, in terms of safeness, you've got plus hit, plus power. He has a wood bat track record. Questions about the position a little bit. Like, I think he's going to stick in the outfield. It's just a matter of which corner. The arm is 55, borderline six. There aren't a ton of warts slash risk to his game. I think there's a relatively safe floor here with Tibbs, and also a reasonably high ceiling. So he's one. Walker Yannick's another that I really like behind the plate. Like,
I'm glad you mentioned Yannick next, because I was thinking, like, I was scrolling down these names and trying to think who the guy is that I feel safest, and I was about to say none, and then I got to Walker Yannick, and I don't know that he has the same upside potential. Like, I could see James Tibbs just hitting so much that he's super valuable. I don't have the confidence that Walker Yannick's hit power tool is that good, but where my confidence comes in is, like, he's just a very well-rounded profile. He's such a great defender that I think even if the bat is not great, he could still provide big league value. Like he would be my, outside of the top tier, which I would stop at, like, the Connor Griffin, Bryce Rainer, Treya Savage grouping in our, like, 9 to 11 spots. Outside of that tier, I think I probably have the most confidence that Walker Yannick is a big leaguer than anyone in the draft class.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable to say. And the margin between him and Loma Vita for me, for my personal number one catcher in the class, is it just keeps on shrinking by the day. And that's more of a testament to how high I am on Yannick than it is to me being lower on Loma Vita. Like, it's a no doubt plus defender behind the dish. He's got a bazooka arm, receives really, really well. And he is a sneaky good mover back there and a solid athlete. Like, he's the furthest thing, like, on the base pass, he's the furthest thing from a clogger, and I think that there is some impact there with the stick as well, even if it's not the most bullish or upsidey offensive profile. Like, I still think that he can provide a perfect amount of value with the bat going forward, and, like, you are looking at a potential, at least an impact defender, that type of upside at the big league level. But there is an impact to be made as well with the bat, I think.
Yeah. Any other players you want to mention this range? I also wanted to talk through just how chaotic the, like, non-Condon Bazzana top of the class seems to be, and how it's so impossible to figure those guys out. But I'll let you mention any other guys in kind of this middle of the first round range if you had any more.
Yeah, the one last player that I would kind of feel safe about pounding the table for, and who I would be, is Carson Benj. I know that we've brought him up a bunch, so I don't need to go too in depth, but I just really like the overall profile, and the makeup is a little bit of a cherry on top for me. It's clear he's a gamer. He loves to play, plays it really, really hard. There's plenty to like from a tool standpoint, but also between the ears, I'm a huge fan of what he brings. So that'd be my last guy.
My other guy that I might just mention here, kind of in the same tier of players, might be Slade Caldwell. He's small, but outside of that, I think he does really everything on the field nicely. And it's a skill set and a tool set that I think is reasonably safe for a high school class. I don't know if you can call any, like, 5'9", 170-pound prep hitter from Arkansas a safe profile, but he just does a lot of things well that I think I associate with a lot of players who just provide some value in the big leagues. And I'm really curious to see how he'll be treated on draft day, because he runs well, he plays center field, he plays that position well. He was a consistent producer for me in games against some of the best competition. I think the bat-to-ball skills are certainly impressive. I would have some concerns about just total impact and power, and where he's going to drive all of his offensive value with wood bats against pro pitching. But I think it's a fairly well-rounded profile for a guy who, again, if he was a few inches taller and bigger, would probably be talked about more in this, like, Bryce Rainer range, but it's kind of limited just given the power upside, I think. Let's move into this, like, elite second tier, maybe non-Condon, non-Bazzana, the top six high school players in the class outside of those, Peter, because I've been trying to figure out some ranking of these players that I feel confident in. And I feel like this is a situation where the more people you talk to, the less confident you feel in an order, because seemingly every scout you ask or every person on the staff you ask has a different order. And I think all these orders can be justified. Like, just looking at six or seven. The six people on the BA staff who we polled, not a single person had the exact same order. and we had some people who had Ben had someone who was six. I don't want to give everyone's order away. We can give ours away if we want, but I don't know if other people want their orders taken. But like some, you could argue the same person who someone had sixth on their list first, and all the way down. Like you can put this together in any order you want. And I think it makes a lot of sense. So trying to figure out, it'll be the day of the draft, and I still will probably not feel confident in the order I have these players. But tell me how you're thinking about this tier of players at this point.
Yeah, it's a really interesting group to decipher, as we talked through yesterday in the Slack, and everyone's order kind of supported it because it was different from one another. But I guess I'll draw my order, and it's even changed since yesterday.
Mine probably will too. I'll look at mine and be like, oh, you know what? I don't know.
Yeah, so I said it in the Slack yesterday, but this would be I'm trying to scroll back and find it because like it is that close.
I've got yours here from the Slack if you want me to run it.
Okay, I just pulled mine up too. So here's how I'd go. I'd go Hagan Smith. Like we'll take Bazan and Conan out of it. So of this next grouping of six, I would go. Am I allowed to throw in a personal name that like isn't it? Well, I'll keep it to this.
Yeah, don't keep it to this group of six because I know you would like James Tibbs in here.
Okay, perfect. I'm glad you put in that disclaimer. All right, so I'd go Hagan Smith at one, I guess three.
Yeah.
Weatherholt at four.
You can do one through six. It'll probably be easier.
Just perfect, yeah. So I go Smith one, Weatherholt two by a hair, over Montgomery at three. Then I would go Chase Burns. I'm like wrestling with the last one. I'd go Caglione and then Kurtz.
Let me give you my order, then we'll talk through them. Perfect. So my order today would be Brayden Montgomery 1, Nick Kurtz 2, Hagan Smith 3, Chase Burns 4, JJ Weatherholt 5, and Jack Caglione 6.
Man.
I wonder, like, why do I have JJ Weatherholt that low now that my list is right there?
as you guys can probably hear of us talking through it, it's a really tough group to kind of decipher and order and and work your way through. Everyone has their pluses, but everyone also has their flaws. Like with Weatherholt, if he had remained fully healthy, we're probably sitting and talking about him right now as a 1-1 type of guy. And I think even with the lack of staying healthy dating back to the summer circuit, like, if you're looking for a wild card 1-1 guy for on the position player side, maybe outside of Conan and Mazzana, Weatherholt certainly fits there. Brayden Montgomery still, I'd say, is more on the outside looking in, but he's certainly in that conversation. Like from a hit tool standpoint, Weatherholt can go toe to toe with Mazzana in my mind.
Yeah.
And the feel for the barrel is outstanding. It's legit bat speed. The barrel really whips through the zone. Hammers the baseball to all fields. Like he had this track record of all that I'm saying going into this year, and then he kind of dealt with his health concerns. But since coming back from an injury, like he is hammering the baseball and like flashing legit impact. I think he's hit a couple home runs over 450 feet or so. And with him, the power, like the hit tool is the calling card, but you know, he's really driving the baseball since coming back from an injury. He showed off the ability to do it with wood as well. He's a baseball rat, can really run, confident about him sticking at second and playing quality. Like there's a lot to like with Weatherholt. And I think he's gone a little bit under the radar compared to everyone else, just 'cause he hasn't been on the field. Everyone else we've kind of talked about, but
yeah. And everyone else has been on the field and been either significantly better or just had really strong seasons too. So it's not like they just have kind of come back and been the same player we saw in 2023. They've all kind of taken another step while JJ Weatherholt has just missed so much time. So.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's a great point too, because it's not like That's also
like Condon took it to the next level. Bazan added some more power. Brady Montgomery continued to evolve as a hitter. Nick Kurtz like did start slow, but then he went on that crazy home run binge. Hagen Smith and Chase Burns have both shown elite stuff. Like Hagen Smith has ticked up in stuff. Chase Burns has posted all year as a starter, which he's never done before. Jack added a lot more contact, cut down on the strikeouts. So like all these guys have really, again, they've just been better than they were in previous years. So I do think you're right. Like JJ Weatherholt has probably fallen a bit under the radar and maybe doesn't get as much love as he probably deserves, just given his track record, given the quality of his hitting ability. But I will say, like, nothing about Weatherholt's profile to me has changed significantly, because I think entering the year, I was very high on JJ Weatherholt just because of his hit tool. Like we had talked about JJ Weatherholt versus Travis Bazzano, where we laid on that one. But for me, I'm only more concerned about his hamstring injury, like that being a recurring thing that will maybe change his profile. I do think speed is going to be an important part of JJ Weatherholt's profile. And like, because he's dealt with this so often, I just am concerned on how that's going to affect him. And I also don't know, like, I think there are some scouts that might think he can play some shortstop, but I ultimately still think he's probably a second baseman. So that hasn't changed too much for me. So it's just very tough for me to kind of place him. Like, I think both Hagen Smith and Chase Burns have significantly more upside than Weatherholt, but they're also pitchers with significant injury risk and just the risk of being a pitching prospect in general, and kind of relievery at times too. So I am going to basically just go insane trying to line these guys up. And in a week or so, I'm just going to have an order locked in. So I'll have to just get over it, I guess.
And I think decision makers, though, are going through this same song and dance in their respective draft rooms and draft calls, because it,
you know what is the huge winner out of all this, Peter, is just the Angels, because they're just picking at eight. They can just take whoever falls to them if they want it. If they view the top eight the same as we do, they're in the best spot in the draft outside of one or two.
Yeah, and I have a feeling, and this is based on nothing but a gut feeling, that someone's going to be there in that 8 to 10 range that going to inevitably fall out of this group, maybe.
Like Connor and Griffin jumps up, and one of the, you get two at eight, and then someone at nine, yeah.
Exactly. Like, I think someone is going to be thrilled with who they're taking in that 8 to 10 range. And again, that's not like intel or I'm teasing anything. That's just a gut feel. Caglione versus Kurtz is an interesting debate. I think I just, for as risky as Caglione is.
Yeah, this one is basically you and Jeff, I think, versus me and Ben. Team Kurtz versus Team Cags at this stage.
And I don't even know if you can call me Team Cat. Like, I'm not going to – I'd take James Tibbs over – like, I'd take James Tibbs over both. Like, I
– Team Kurtz or Team Cags? Neither. Team Tibbs.
Literally, though, to keep it just in the – I didn't want to bring him into the mix just to keep it to these six names. But him versus Kurtz is an interesting debate. Like, with Caglione, it's this, we've talked at length about him at this point, but the raw power is double plus. It's electrifying bat speed. He's a great athlete in the box, but there are these hit tool concerns, and rightfully so. There's a ton of miss. And then with Kurtz, it's plus hit, plus power. Also some health concerns with him, though, is with his shoulder. Now maybe I'm talking myself back into like taking
Hurts. And then with both these guys too, you just have the dreadful first base track record of first rounders in really the bonus pool era. You probably could go back more than that, but it's not a great series of outcomes for the guys who have gone this high who have been first basemen. So it's tough.
No, it's not at all. And I guess when you want to talk about the defense a little bit, I like Kurtz over there more than I do Caglione. Like, Caglione's a good athlete, but he's a little bit of a heavy stepper, I guess you could call it. Whereas Kurtz, for me, I've seen him a little more nimble. He handles himself really well around the bag. Like, he's a guy that he would need to play out there unless it was a serious, serious pinch. But, like, he would handle himself just fine, I think, for a game or two in a corner outfield spot. And, like, that's not going to add anything to his profile, and nobody's going to be like, we need to take Kurtz in this spot because he can like be an emergency fourth outfielder if two guys go down. But it does, I think, speak to like his sneaky nimbleness around the bat. Like, he's a plus defender over there and as close to an impact defender as I think you can have.
Yeah. Outside of Trey Morgan.
Yes. Outside of Trey Morgan, obviously. But yeah, now I may have talked myself back into Kurtz over Caglione. because it's like plus hit, plus power, really good approach. Barrel skills are there with high quality impact. And then with Caglione, you have this crazy power upside. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of pick your poison there. But when all is said and done, I'm taking Tibbs over both.
Well, I can't wait for the draft so we can stop having to worry about the order we're lining them up in, and we can just see what the industry thinks and how they view it. The people who actually have to put their money where their mouth is and where their boards are. And then we can kind of just sit back and see what happens. But if you guys feel strongly about the order of these players, please let us know. I'll be curious to know like where you guys are at. Maybe it'll still continue to drive me crazy because I'm sure there'll be new iterations of this order that I haven't seen yet, but will inevitably come across the screen. Peter, should we get back to watching college baseball and writing, or is there anything else you want to mention on today's episode?
Yeah, no, that I think we hit on everything that at least I wanted to get to. So yeah. I've had the Miami Clemson game on here in the background. Miami left fielder made a sick catch at the wall to lead him to a win over Clemson. So there's sure to be more action today and the rest of the week.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll be looking forward to it. I'll be looking forward to breaking it down with you next week. And talking more draft with you guys. So hope y'all enjoyed. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you guys next time.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.